Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Robert Ingles. Robert is the founder of Law Pods. He's a recovering attorney who now helps lawyers with podcasting. And before I had him on the show, I was already listening to one of their productions called How I Lawyer. If you're worried that Robert and I just nerd out over legal podcasting during the episode, don't worry, although we definitely do some of that. Robert actually has some great ideas about how podcasting can play a role in subscription legal services that makes the whole episode worth a listen. If podcasting for lawyers is something you're interested in, I am leading a session at ABA Tech Show in 2024 in February called Podcasting for Lawyers: Mastering the Medium with AI. So go to techshow.com to purchase tickets to ABA Tech Show and make sure to come to that session. Thank you to my sponsor, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes. More on them later. And remember to use the code LawSubscribed when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off and it really supports the show. I'd love to hear about your experience using my sponsor, so please email me your comments at kerbis@lawsubscribed.com. For subscriptionseminar.com, I'm taking firms off the waitlist one at a time in the order they signed up, so sign up now to get your spot in line. I'm an active participant in the process of helping you use the subscription model, and I'm a full-time practicing attorney, so thank you for your patience. Another way to support this show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Robert Ingles from Law Pods, thanks so much for coming on Law Subscribed.
Hey, it is my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I mean, there are thanks to you, there are a growing number of attorneys who podcast, but few who podcast and edit it. So it's a pleasure to have a like-minded person on the show. Truly. Thanks for coming.
Do you know how cool it is to even hear that thanks to me, there's a lot more law podcasts out there? Because, I mean, we're in, 2023 now. I listened to my first podcast almost 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had no idea that listening to that podcast was just going to change the entire trajectory of my life. Even when I started getting into it and I was having fun with it, the idea that I would be the person that would go and do that for them, like that would help people do that.
So just in case somebody's listening for the first time, they haven't heard of Law Pods, they haven't heard of you, just give the quick background, because I know there are a lot of other podcasts that they could just search Law Pods in their podcast app and they'll hear you give your full background. So just the quick version for my audience.
Yeah, sure. So I was a lawyer, you know, in 2015. I kind of had an entrepreneurial seizure brought on by the notice that I would be having children soon. And that kind of freaked me out. And I was overwhelmed in my law career. That sent me spiraling, sent me towards personal development. And that's where I discovered podcasting. And within a month of listening to my first one, I bought this mic that I'm talking to, Go Big or Go Home, right? And just over a period of time, it was my hobby. I was really passionate about it. Other people saw me doing it. They asked me, hey, can you help me do it? First client. And then I loved doing it. I loved figuring this stuff out because there wasn't really a roadmap yet. And it just happened to coincide with a market need. And because people will ask me, how did you know? I didn't really know. I saw that it was growing, but I didn't have any idea that it was going to grow to a way where it was going to be able to support me. It was something I liked doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it must have been like web developers in the mid-90s. It was like, this is really cool building these websites. And then all of a sudden people needed them and wanted them. And so eventually I ended up leaving law practice. I got a job at a bank where it was pretty cushy job. I don't know if anybody's looking to leave law and get a job that's cushy compared to law. Banks are pretty sweet. And it allowed me to have some time to think and build this company. Mm-hmm. So I had that flexibility where nights and weekends I could work on this. But I had I had kids at this point. And so I had their health insurance covered and just their bills and things like that without having to stress about that. Mm-hmm. And then I also was able to build this company. And within 2 years of getting my first client, I was talking to my first AmLaw 100 client, and which blew my mind that a firm like this that would have never hired me as a lawyer. I mean, never. They would have laughed at my resume. And I was having a conversation with them, and that's, you know, now I have 9 shows with that firm. I've got top 10 global firms now that I'm working with. And it was a unique experience to go from where I was into this. And it's still very surreal to be writing, like I write marketing copy that some of the largest firms in the world are using. And that blows my mind because I don't have a background in marketing. I never took a class. I never took a business class.
Well, are you writing it or is generative AI writing it?
I mean, generative AI is neat. But it's super new. Like at this point, we've never used that to write ad copy for a client. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know where that's going. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but no, like copy I've personally written myself has been used. And that really is, it's neat to see that happen because I am a bit of an anxious person. So I spend a lot of time, and you should have seen me preparing for trial, dear Lord. But the amount of time that I'll spend sitting with something and reworking it and reorganizing it because I want it to be just right. But then the payoff is it ends up being really good. Like, you know, you see it and you're like, I guess it's good enough. And they see it and they go, damn. Mm-hmm. So that's been a cool process.
Yeah. I have to ask, since this is the Law Subscribed podcast where the goal is eliminate the billable hour, were you billing time when you were a lawyer?
I was. You know, I was doing different things. There was a lot of talk about different models of billing, you know, the flat fee model. Hey, let's charge somebody a fee. And I was trying that, but I didn't do a good job. I found myself working way too hard for cases I quoted for far too little. Mm-hmm. And so I tried different things, but a lot of what I was doing was billable. And I hated that. I really didn't like it and was very happy. I'm very happy now to never consider time. Like everything's value-based in my company.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh, that's the way to do it. And so to yes and your earlier point, if you're sick of practicing law, billing time, you don't have to just go be a banker. You could also abandon the billable hour and use the subscription model.
Right.
That's another way
right.
you could achieve that balance. Because at the end of the day, Robert, too, you don't want lawyers quitting law because then they're not your clients for when they want to launch a podcast, right?
You know, I'm an abundance mindset person. I assume there's always going to be enough out there.
Right, right. So yeah, not billing time. And so when you say you're selling your value, so when you, and really it goes back to, I'm also interested in your journey of starting this business and like, what do I even charge people? Like, how do I charge, right? So like, how are you, and you don't have to give your prices right now, but especially because, you know, while these podcasts, I try to make them evergreen. So price is always subject to change if you do mention them. But like, how do you decide how to charge for this service you're providing and not billing your time? What was your thought process there and how did you make those decisions?
It was incredibly hard on day one. And I think like most business owners, especially in new industries, you end up selling yourself really, really cheaply for two reasons. One, I don't think you really value what you're doing yet, but the market also doesn't understand it. So the market doesn't necessarily value it either. And you're new, so you're not quite as good as you could be. And so it's a process that was really difficult. And I would say in the last year, we've really just found our footing where okay, this is reasonable, but we also are starting to understand the value better. Because in the beginning, it's content marketing at its very core, doing a podcast. You're creating content marketing in your voice. It goes on your website. You can use video on YouTube. You can take it and cut it apart and put it on your social media channels, but it's content marketing. Mm-hmm. And so that, the understanding of the value there is semi-established. And so then looking at the long term, okay, what are our clients seeing after a year, after 2 years, and seeing how that plays into their overall marketing strategy, and then understanding the value we're delivering was really helpful. In competition, looking around who's doing it, how much are they charging? And that's tough because there's people out there, you know, I call them chop shops, that will charge almost nothing to do this. And some of them aren't making a profit and they won't stay in business long. Some are just doing a very basic job. And they serve a need. But I knew when I got into this and I started reading books and understanding and listening to entrepreneurs and really having a really intense hunger for understanding business, you can take the Walmart model or you can take the boutique model. And my personality doesn't work for the Walmart model, just trying to find the narrowest margin in the world. And so that from day one, that was never what I was looking to do. I wanted to, and from an anxiety perspective, I feel like everything has to be perfect. That spoke to a high-end model, something where what is the unique value that we can bring to you? Mm-hmm. And that isn't going to be easy to replicate by other people. But the fact that I am a lawyer helps. Like I was on a kickoff call with two trial lawyers in Pennsylvania today that are starting a podcast. And we spent an hour together and we were able to come to a place where we were ready to launch this podcast that if I didn't have my background, I wouldn't have. I understood who their consumer was. I understood the unique things that they wanted to talk about. And we put together a map for like a year of content and angles that would have taken me probably much longer if I hadn't understood what they were doing. So that helped a lot.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, you know, if you're a patent lawyer who is an engineer and you're helping engineers with their patents, it makes your job a lot easier. Being a lawyer, helping lawyers launch and produce a podcast makes it a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So at the end of the day, you were billing your time, very unhappy.
Yeah.
Now you've moved to, while you're not practicing law, not billing your time, doing value-based billing for the services that you are offering, very happy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And my biggest problem too with law was just the constant conflict of it was it wore on me. And, you know, I learned from a young age that you got to lean into hard things or you won't go anywhere. And so I learned that, but then it kind of betrayed me in law. I stayed longer than I should have because I was like, this is really hard and I hate it. I have to lean in. And so it did take me a little bit longer to get out, but that now I don't have the amount of conflict in my life is so small now. And that's the way I want it.
Right. Right.
And I tried estate planning at the end because they were like, there's no conflict in that. And it was so boring for me.
Yeah. Because it is very siloed with just you and your clients most of the time in estate planning stuff. I think the billable hour, though, is part of what's responsible for such a competitive environment, because the longer it takes, even though I think most lawyers are trying to be ethical and they're not thinking like this, the incentives are there for the longer this takes, the more money I make. And yeah. I think collaborative law, which is becoming more and more of a thing, when you're not billing your time, I think that's more of an option that lawyers are willing to consider. Because if I'm able to deliver value, whatever it is, subscription, flat fee, subscription plus flat fee, if I'm able to deliver value tomorrow and we could do it collaborating instead of how long is it going to take, right, then I think you get to that result a lot sooner. So you're still problem solving with another lawyer representing a client, but it's more growing the pie than splitting the pie type of mentality, which I think the billable hour doesn't help incentivize those types of results.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's even for the most ethical lawyer, when the incentive is off, I think that subconsciously you can talk yourself into things that might not otherwise be the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it blows my mind that lawyers and law firms are paying for subscriptions for technology or value for launching a podcast, and they're not paying other service providers to the firm for their time, yet they continue to bill their time, right? I mean, it's not part of what you do, but I challenge you, Robert, or your team members to, whenever you're launching the next podcast for a law firm, on part of that intake form, be like, what billing model do you use? Because I'd love to have some of your podcast people on my show to then also promote their podcast and their subscription that they're doing, which is, talk about aligning incentives, right? Let's get this, you know, reciprocal guest and promotion going with Law Subscribed and all the Law Pods podcasts. Who have subscriptions for their law firm, staying in like your pivot time in your life. When in our pre-show chat, you mentioned that you came up with a number of ideas when you're like, I need to do something else. And subscriptions was on that list. And while you didn't end up doing that, like, tell me a little bit about what led you to like thinking of that even as an idea.
I think it was when I first was finding my way and listening to podcasts and coming up with ideas and knowing that I didn't want to keep doing what I was doing in law. There was the first thing I found my way into was the tech space. I was in Charlotte at the time, and the tech scene, the startup scene was pretty lively there. And I wanted to be in stuff. Like, I found this, I was excited about it. And so I started going to events, and all the people I was meeting were developing apps and doing stuff in the tech space. And that's very subscription oriented. And so that kind of put it on my radar. And I was like, at the time, I really felt like I had to do something with law. I mean, I guess I still stuck with it, but it felt like it needed to be more tied to law. Like, I didn't think, oh, I'm going to serve the law community as much as like it felt like it needed to be tied into law. And so that was my thought, like, how can we change the law model? And that was, I did a lot of work in it, and I drew up the charts and did business plans. And the thing that kept that I kept running into the wall with, which I'm sure is it's getting better every day, I can be positive, but the rules. There were so many rules about what you could and couldn't do and how you could do it. And this is in the middle of people coming, you know, the state bar is trying to come after LegalZoom and different people. And the idea, again, for my personality type, pretty anxious and don't like conflict, the idea that I was going to start something where people were going to immediately be trying to attack me and say, no, this is not how we do it. We do it the old way. Stop trying to reinvent things. That was one of the things that kind of pushed it off for me, but it was attractive because it was new, it was disruptive, and I felt like valuable because the way things had historically been done, there is clearly a lot of room to fix that, to change it. And I knew I wanted to be doing something new. I didn't want to just follow somebody else's path. I very much felt like I want to go do something that's different and unique. And one of my first ideas to stay in law was like, hey, let's do a virtual estate planning law firm. That was one of them. And we even started kind of trying to build it. And it was, I mean, I think we were early. I think that is an insanely good idea. And the idea that, I mean, I think we also with COVID really pushed that ball down the field because I had a Zoom account. I was probably one of the first people in the world to have a Zoom account. Zoom was not a household name. This was back in 2015, I think. Mm-hmm. And I would always try to get new clients to do a Zoom call as their intake. And it was really, really hard. They needed to see me.
Yeah.
And so, but we're a long ways down from that now.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And people ask me about, you know, if I could have, would I have started my subscription law firm sooner? And I said, no, because the client expectation wasn't there. Like the pandemic totally changed client expectations. And now everyone has some kind of video virtual conferencing app on their phone, let alone their computer. Yep. And so it's easier than ever. And if I'm not going to an attorney's office, I don't need to see a very expensive high rise office with mahogany furniture, you know, and all that. So if I don't need to pay for that kind of overhead too, then I can lower my prices too. So my overhead is basically non-existent. Clients don't expect to meet me in an office anyway because of the current mindset that they're in. So now I could launch this innovative law practice, right, that serves the latent legal market. But I couldn't have done that before. So even when I was coming up with the idea for the Law Subscribe podcast, it was before the pandemic. And like that wasn't even a part of it. And so even the podcast has shifted and changed with time, with changing client expectations. So timing is everything, Robert. And, you know, you had a great idea that the time had not yet arrived yet.
Right.
But you know, an innovative person like yourself coming to that as a potential idea, I think does show that it is a worthwhile idea. It was just early. You were just early to the scene. Something I'd like to get a little bit meta here, and we will talk about podcasts and subscription podcasts in a minute, is I'm so happy and thrilled. You're like the third podcaster I've had on the show, and that I don't have to like go through headphones and background noise and audio levels. And I used to do local recordings, but I've actually found Zoom's cloud recording. I've had zero issues with it since I've started to do that. So I don't do local recordings anymore. But I'm sure if I had asked you to set up a local recording, you probably weren't able to do that. And like all the things that I have to, you know, usually have guests do before I get started, it was such a welcome experience that I could just trust that this guy knows what he's doing. And you sound excellent and everything looks really good. So I just have to thank you for that.
Hey, I appreciate that. That was a big one for me getting started. I got really into the gear in the beginning and I was like, oh, I have to have all the things and spend all the money. And you should see my closet behind me. It's just stacked with gear. But it's funny that you say background noise because the cleaning crew is here and they keep running the vacuum. So if anybody hears background noise, I apologize. But you sound pretty good with that.
Yeah, your setup is well tuned. So yeah. The gain is adjusted right. I'm sure you've got maybe a little bit of soundproofing. I see the curtain in the back there that is, you know, probably absorbs just a little bit of sound, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Got some rugs down under me.
Yeah, I'm sure, right. The sound treatment, not soundproofing, sound treating.
There you go.
Because sometimes soundproof doesn't sound as good as sound treated. It doesn't sound as natural. So another thing is that I want to talk about too is like when you're, because you are a lawyer, but you help these law firms set up their own podcast. That's what Law Pods does. You know, you help lawyers launch their own podcast. But something that I recently learned at PodFest from a lawyer who helps non-lawyers with setting a podcast that they're trying to monetize, like being a coach or these other things, he wants them to sign this like multi-page or have guests sign this multi-page release, things like that, because maybe they want to turn their podcast into a book. Maybe they want to do other things with it. And I've always just gotten verbal consent over the phone. So like, I know you're a lawyer, but you're not giving legal advice, but like, how are you handling like sort of the ancillary to the podcast things with your clients? Like, what are you doing in that space?
Yeah. Thank you for preempting that. Everything I say should not be relied on. You should always consult with your attorney before making any decisions. But for a lot of our lawyers, you brought up a really good point. If you want to repurpose this later, if you want to take this, these conversations you're having and turn them into a book and things like that, I think it's a great idea to, you know, in your intake form, I think is how you're doing it, is have them sign that release right there. Hey, by clicking here, you consent that you have read this and that you're agreeing to let me use your likeness in this conversation, yada, yada, yada. I think those are all really good ideas. And, you know, there are a handful of people that we work with that are using those, but a lot of people are considering it more, they're having conversations that they're not really considering repurposing later for those kind of purposes. So they streamline it a little bit more. So it goes both ways. It just depends on what people's long-term goals are with the podcast.
Yeah. So let's say one of my listeners, which most of them are attorneys or technologists building for attorneys, they want to launch a podcast and they want to hire LawPods to do it. So then what do? You have like equipment recommendation lists, you do the, you know, the software recommendation lists, or do they just need to show, you send them the equipment, they show up, you do all the things in post. Like, what does that look like if an attorney were to hire LawPods to help them launch a podcast?
Yeah, you nailed it with the second one. You do the talking, we do the rest. Because when we first started, we would recommend gear. And you know how lawyers are. They did their own research. They found a mic they thought was better. And I hope I'm not burning goodwill with any of your listeners. They're like, damn, this guy. And so what we said is, no, we're done with that. And we ship them the mic. Part of the intake process is, where do we ship your mic? And so we ship them the microphone, the stand, the headset. And that way they've got what they need for their recording environment. Because most people aren't in a sound studio. Mm-hmm. Because for better or for worse, people love the Blue Yeti. They love it. It's big. It's sexy. It looks like Walter Cronkite, right? And which I don't want to disparage the mic. If you're in a sound studio, it's going to sound good. If you've got proper mic technique and you're in a sound studio, you're going to sound really good with that mic. But my clients aren't there. They're in their offices. They're in their spare bedroom at home. And they need a microphone that is going to pick up their voice right here. And essentially nothing else. That's what we want. And so, you know, if somebody's looking for a mic like that, just get a dynamic mic, get a dynamic cardioid mic, and you're probably going to be okay if you're recording in it just in your spare bedroom or something like that. And so, yeah, we ship it to them. We record it for them. We use Riverside.fm is the platform we use. Squadcast is another really good alternative there. And it gets high quality audio, high quality video right from your browser. It has an Android app. It has a iOS app. And you can record with guests anywhere they happen to be. You're going to get good quality with it. But we set that up. We set up a calendar for them where they can book it. They just show up. We do sound checks with their mics, make sure their guests are selected the mic correctly. Mm-hmm. And we hit record. They talk, they hang up, and they're done. And we take it. We do the editing, show notes, descriptions, full-length video edits, post it to YouTube, post it to their website. Cut up the video into branded video clips with captions and post them onto their social media accounts. So it's really this multifaceted content marketing strategy by showing up and talking for 20 minutes.
Right, right. I mean, it's essentially a turnkey solution at that point.
That some would call it that.
Yes, yes. When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice. But with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. So podcasting is more like you just showed. It's more than just having like, you know, being on the podcast feed in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, whatever, right? Like there's all these other content aspects of it. I've even found that when I had a potential client meeting with somebody who was going to introduce me to a number of other potential clients, but she wanted me to send her like a quick like informational thing. And because I am here in my podcast studio, which is an actual sound treated like recording studio closet that I have, where I have a Blue Yeti, though, mounted from the ceiling to avoid vibrations with a shock mount and about a hang loose distance away from my mouth off camera.
See, right? If you're going to do that, that's how you do it.
So, right. So since I have, because I'm a podcaster and I take it very seriously, everything's fine tuned. So I'm in my studio is where I actually work too, because I have this nice ultra wide monitor here. I'm able to just basically turn on all my podcasting recording equipment. And I use Descript now to not just edit podcasts, but also do screen grabs and video recording. And the same way that Robert, I'm recording this podcast with you, I'm able to record a 2-minute video for this potential client to share with other potential clients. So like even just the skill set of something like that for business development, like even in a more direct way, like there are like these tools, these skills, these, you know, the resources that you're helping lawyers with can even be used for more targeting things than, you know, for something like that. So, I mean, the value of learning to do this, whether it's yourself or you're hiring law pods, cannot be understated for the potential.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's one of the things that drew me to it was how much value you can get from such a minimal time investment. Mm-hmm. And that was our value prop, right? Is you put in, because the lawyer's time is the most valuable thing. And how can we minimize their time investment into it and then maximize the value? And that's where it goes back to value-based. We can command a certain price point because we can demonstrate that we're doing things that we're taking off of you, that you're not going to have to spend all this time and energy. Because once most clients do an episode or two with us, especially our clients that are really busy, that have high volume practices, they don't even want to see it. When they hang up, they don't ever want to see anything again. They don't want to see the edited product. They don't want to see the video. They don't want to see the clips. They just want us to go do the work.
Right. And so now what I want to talk about, I really want to bring it back to subscription legal services, but just in general, just getting subscribers to subscribe and stay subscribed. Because one of the things that we talk about, I've talked about with other guests who are actually using the subscription model, is how can we ethically create incentives for clients to stay subscribed? Now, if it's a family law related issue, maybe once their divorce is done, it doesn't make sense, right? So this will only be applicable to certain areas. But creating that stickiness of value, right? So like my $20 a month or $100 a month subscription is book a time to, you get access to book a, you know, call with me. You get access to my knowledge base. You get access to all these things. And so that's a reason to stay subscribed, is because you get access to all these things. But having something like a client-only podcast, right?
Yeah.
Also adds stickiness to that value, potentially, right, of staying on.
So tell
me a little bit. Yeah, tell me a little bit about what you've been thinking in terms of like private podcast feeds, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that this is something relatively new to the legal space, but it's something we've seen in the podcast space in general for a long time. I mean, Patreon was a big one doing private podcast feeds where you could have, a lot of people would have a main podcast and they'd say, for our subscriber only content, visit our Patreon feed. And you would pay whatever, you'd pay X dollars and you would get access to the private podcast feed. And you might even come with like a Facebook group or whatever extra additional resources. And what a private podcast is really is just taking the content you're making via podcast and you're putting it on a private feed where a subscriber will get a unique feed for them. They will take that feed, they'll put it in their podcast player so they can listen to it the same way that they listen to this podcast. Just it's in Apple, it's in Spotify, but you have to put your feed there. But then for every episode, it's always going to be there. And then if you stop subscribing to that feed, then it will turn off. And so you won't get any new feeds. You'll lose access to your old episodes. And so you're creating it where people who are subscribed can listen to the things that you're making for them. You can provide them that information, that extra benefit, regardless of what you're trying to do. And if you're working with somebody during a case and the information is good, and you mentioned family law earlier, there are one of the things that I think is valuable for those kinds of cases is even after the case is done, there's a lot of things that are changing in that person's life that they need help with. And that's where I think you bring on experts, you bring on the mortgage brokers who work specifically with people who are divorced. You bring on the estate planning attorneys who work specifically with people who need to restructure. There's lots of things after the fact, I think, that can still be valuable. And that's probably just scratching the surface of ideas. But you're creating a knowledge base that can be in addition to other stuff, other value that you're giving them that you can charge them for. It's kind of behind a paywall. Another example, working with a client right now who has built a consulting business on the side of their trial practice. They kind of go hand in hand. And there is a private podcast feed for the consulting business to help drive business. People can come, they can listen to it, but it's private, plaintiffs only. And then they will develop that relationship of know, like, and trust, and then understand the real value in the consulting firm and hire them.
And
so
hire
I think
them,
we're just starting that, but
hire them as a consultant or hire the law firm or both?
Hire them as a consultant.
Okay.
Well, because I mean, this specific podcast, and it can be used in almost, it can use, be used to support almost any initiative. Mm-hmm. But in this specific situation, it is to educate other lawyers about the consulting that they can do. And they will learn about it. They'll get to know it and say, wow, if it could change that person's case, I can learn these things. I'm coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really glad when we were having our pre-show talk and you brought up this idea, because I thought about how it could be used for attorneys in their practice, which I'd never done before. But I've been trying to, with Law Subscribed, do a private podcast feed as well. And the tool that I found that I was thinking about doing that through was Castos. Have you discovered that in part of your research, or are you looking at other tools? Are you going to do a custom in-house version of this? Like, what has been your solution to doing the private podcast thing?
There's a lot of different angles there. You know, we said Patreon earlier. It's not my favorite, but it's easy. You can set it up. They kind of handle everything. They take 20 cents. I think they take something like 20 cents on the dollar, which is a little steep, but it's easy. But then almost every podcast hosting platform now does one. So we use Captivate for a lot of ours. And there's different pluses and minuses. Some of them handle the payment, which is nice. The person goes there, they pay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to handle any of that. So if you're charging for it, it's really nice to have, they just get the feed kicked to them. But if you're managing it yourself, you would need to figure out, you know, it might, if it's part of something other payment, no big deal. But you've got to get their email into the feed so they get their own feed kicked out. And so there could be some things that could be automated. Some might be manual. So there's pluses and minuses to the different, but there's lots of different providers of private podcast feed. The big ones, the big main hosting platforms all have private feeds now too.
Yeah. And I've seen that, like Subscribe. You could subscribe and pay something right in Apple Podcasts.
Right. Apple has their own specific one. So if you just wanted to have it on Apple, you can charge people through Apple now.
Right. Right. And I've seen like some of the NPR ones that now go through Wondery, which is an Amazon product. You get the ads on Apple unless you subscribe on Apple. But if you listen to it on like Amazon Music or whatever, then you don't get ads. So, I mean, that's a whole different strategic, you know, thing that they're trying to accomplish.
There's a lot happening. There's a lot happening in that space right now.
Yeah.
Spotify would really like to become the YouTube of podcasts. That's what they really want. I really don't want them to. Well, I mean, look at YouTube now. It's, if you're not paying, I think they're charging $16 or so dollars a month now. Everything you watch there, you've got to watch an ad at the beginning. Then you've got to get mid-roll ads. And it's a very, it just messes up the experience. And I love, what I love about podcasting is you can open your podcasting app. People are listening to us on their app right now. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they'll get ads, but it's ads you have chosen that you might be reading. And I can skip through them. YouTube not letting you do that. Spotify's not going to let you do it either when they get their hands on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, the experience is much better.
Yeah.
And if Spotify gets, if they win this, And they basically, it's like, oh, you listen to podcasts, you listen on Spotify. Now, there's a lot of players trying to fight right now. Apple's, you know, Apple's a big one. They got pretty deep pockets. I don't think they're going to give up anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Amazon's in there. They tend to deliver pretty well on the products that they try to invest in. So I don't expect them to give up without a pretty solid fight. So I have high hopes that podcasting is not going to be consolidated too soon and right. give us a bad experience.
Right. I mean, at the time of recording, I think we're like 2 or 3 weeks into YouTube launching their podcasts feature right. where now you could click, you know, you basically turn any of your playlists into like what they're calling a podcast. And what is it actually doing? It's just labeling it a podcast. That's right. literally all it's yeah. doing.
I don't trust Google to do almost anything other than search very well. Like, how many things has Google launched? Like, there was like Google Wave, and they've tried all these, you know, the social media platforms they tried, and they just, you know, you know, and even podcasts, even Google Podcasts seems like a pretty half-hearted effort.
Yeah, yeah, I think, although I do think there's something to be said that Spotify is trying to do video podcasts and encouraging that, especially those using formerly Anchor, now Spotify yeah. for podcasters, and uploading videos, and YouTube just going full on into video podcasts. I like for your clients, are they also recording video that you're using for that social media content, or for their main whole podcast, you're just doing audio? Like, what are you seeing in that space?
No, we're doing all of it. And we were doing that before Anchor was becoming Spotify and or becoming, you know, the video. And before YouTube was leaning into the video, we've been recording video for clients for years now. Mm-hmm. And because there was a need for it, there was a desire for it and a demand, if you will. And so we saw if we're making this video, we're getting these additional impressions. And if you keep up with podcasting news, the latest stats I saw in Pod News were 25% of people, I think, want to listen to their podcast on YouTube. Now, I don't know who these people are, but they apparently exist. And so, it bears out in the numbers too, because mm-hmm. we publish our clients' edited videos to YouTube mm-hmm. and the numbers are real. We're seeing people want that. People want to be able to go and watch that. And some people just want to be able to click it in their browser and then do something else and listen to it kind of like a podcast in their browser. Right. And the cost of producing that and putting it there is low enough that it hasn't created a problem. Like the value's there mm-hmm. to creating that video. But then the real, I think even more valuable upside is that ability to have that video and clip it.
Yeah.
Flip it into these little 60-second hits with your branding, with your captions that you can share on social media that are, you know, you can probably get 5 or 6 of these clips out of even short episodes. Mm-hmm. And you're putting them on all the different platforms you're using. And those are going to be excellent branding. But if you've got titles on them, they're branded, they're captioned, you're also, it's a really good billboard for if somebody needs this, that tells them whether they need it or not. The title. They
right.
can see the caption, because we know people like videos, but they only want to watch your video if they can first read it and know it's for them.
Yeah.
So those have been great.
And one more thing about the private podcast, from what I've seen from the research I've done on it, is like it shows up the ones that I've seen. So I am curious to know, since I've got the expert on the podcast now, is that it will like show up in any of your preferred podcast apps. So like if you listen to Apple Podcasts, like that's where the link, the private podcast shows up. Or if you listen to Google, I don't know if they do any of them or if it's like a unique RSS feed or how that's done on the back end. But like I've seen some really cool things. Like if you're an Apple Podcast listener, like it's sort of agnostic for these private podcasts where they end up showing up. It could be in a web browser. It could be in a podcast app. Like the flexibility here for the listeners who are thinking about launching a podcast now, like it's the ease of use for your client, for the listeners to your podcast. Is there like there's right. incredible ease of use? Am I on to yeah. that?
You're absolutely right. It's just a private feed that you add to your player, and a lot of them will have. You can just have the buttons. If you listen on Pocket Cast, click here. It'll open Pocket Cast and load the feed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's as easy as clicking a button. And so they're not even copying and pasting it. But that's worst case is they copy and paste it into the search browser and they can add it that way. It's very right. simple.
Right, right. So because this is.
I was going to say, I love that you called me an expert and I don't have to qualify that anymore. I don't have to say no governing authority has said that I can say that. I can totally say it.
Right. Because you're not practicing law. You're the
exactly.
podcast
I'm
expert.
A podcast
for lawyers.
Expert.
Yes. Yes. And so I got to be careful with the subscription attorney, because it's in my moniker also says I'm an attorney.
Right.
But I do call myself a subscription expert. So because we're not just talking subscriptions, we're also talking podcasts, I have to ask, what was your first podcast that you listened to?
Oh, man, this is it's funny because I think I only ever listened to one episode, and it was Entree Leadership with Dave Ramsey. I don't know that I've ever said that on a podcast before. I don't think anybody's asked me what my first one was, but it's funny because when I found out my wife was like, hey, we're having a baby, like basically yesterday, I kind of had a freak out. And because I was running this firm, I wasn't doing very well. I had like zero money. I had not figured out how to make money yet. And so I sat down and made a list, and at the top of the list was money. I got to get this money thing together. I got to figure this out. Dave Ramsey has a book on money, very popular. So I read it. It's a good book. It helped me understand some things. And then he also had a book called Entree Leadership. It's just about entrepreneur leadership. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. I'll read that, because I wasn't doing a very good job managing my office at the time either. And that book said, you should listen to our podcast at the end.
Mm-hmm.
We have a podcast called Entree Leadership. So I listened to it. It wasn't really for me. It was kind of, at the time, at least, it seemed like it was trying to drive their live events, which I wasn't going to do any of that, but I was already in the app. So I typed in, I think I typed something like office culture. I was like, I didn't understand at that point what was there in podcast. I didn't realize everything like bubblegum is there. I didn't realize that.
Right.
And so I just typed something similar to what I was listening to. And the show Awesome Office came up, and they're not publishing anymore, but it was a show about having awesome office culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the first guest was Tom Bilyeu, and he was one of the original founders of Quest Nutrition. He has a show now called Impact Theory, but this is back when he was still with Quest. But he's a personal development guy in his soul. Like, he just, coming up, he wasn't very well put together. He was very aimless. His mindset was not where it needed to be. And he kind of had this awakening, and his mission in life became to help other people have this awakening. And so I always like to put into the universe, I can't wait to meet the man, because he was my awakening. But I heard him on this podcast, and the boiled down takeaway is so bland, but I finally heard it was, you can really do anything with your life. And it was the first time I really heard it, and it meant something, because I'm standing there, I'm freaked out, I don't like what I'm doing, I'm overwhelmed. And somebody just gave me license to go do whatever I want. And I didn't know what that was, but it's a shift in your mindset where you can go, you allow yourself to think differently. And I thought, I think I can do anything I want. And that was really the big moment that just propelled me into this. Like, I just got so into personal development. I got into tech, into entrepreneurship, into all of it. And that's where, you know, 30 days after listening to that podcast, I bought this mic.
Yeah. 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 That's something. Mine was Hardcore History by Dan Carlin.
Nice.
And it's still to this day, like, he only publishes like once or twice a year.
But like 5 hours long.
But they're like 5 hours long. And it was because of him that I started to do 1.5 speed and 2x speed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he talks so slow.
Yeah. I love that. I saw him. My first podcast conference I went to was in 2017 in Anaheim, Podcast Movement. And he was one of the keynotes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool to hear his process.
Yeah. 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 And I'm actually going to borrow from him. And what he does is he posts episodes for free, but then eventually they go into a backlog that he charges for. And so, right, I think that's eventually I'll be doing something like that for Lost Subscribed via a private podcast type thing.
Yeah.
But always publish for free for the first, you know, the first time it's out there.
And there's another way that a lot of famous podcasters are doing their feeds now too, is they'll do a short version, like a 30-minute version of an episode or whatever. And then if you want the full version, you can do the paid feed.
Right. I'm going to do a combination. So I'll keep up at like half the episode once they go into the private backlog, because I still want the feed to be out there, but I'm going to truncate them as they go into private.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Dan Carlin just removes them from the feed when he charges for them. So one last podcasting related thing, and then my final question that I ask all my guests is, so the podcasting thing is, for show notes, there is a generative AI tool that is built around show notes for podcasts. It's called Swell AI. Have you heard of this one yet?
No, Swell. Like
Swell, SWELLAI.com.
I like learning new things.
Yes. And so if they want to sponsor the podcast, they're welcome to. But so free promo for them. But I just found out about them through Descript. Descript does a lot of content creation that I consume. and you could integrate an RSS feed with it. And I think it listens to the podcast and then it pumps out show notes. So for someone who's in the business of podcasting that's selling value, to do the first draft of it where you're not going to bill your time to do the, or, you know, to do the first draft of podcast show notes, there you go, Robert. There's my gift to you is check out Swell AI. And at least if you could provide more value in less time, then you could take on more clients and scale. And when you're not selling your time, scale, it's all about scalability and being able to scale.
Yeah,
to bring
absolutely.
It back to bring it back to the model. So, but with that, my final question I have for you is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
I would say no. I like that question. It's super out of left field. I don't feel like it's a sandwich, but I think that's more of a gut feeling. When I think about it, like a hot dog is a unique thing on its own. A sandwich is, that's a good question, because now I'm arguing with myself. I'm like, I don't know, you call a hoagie a sandwich, but that's bread cut down the middle and wrapped around meat. Damn, I like it. Good question. I'm like most things in life, I have to think about that before I have a better answer. But I guess at the end of the day, I'm probably just going to go ahead and say, yeah, I think there's a really good argument that it is.
All right. All right. Well, you heard it here.
You made me change my mind right away. I argued with myself and went, no, my gut reaction might not be right.
Challenge limiting beliefs. You showed you had a growth mindset. I think those are all good things.
Mindset is like that. That was a book that in that episode, Tom Bill, you talked about, and I read it right away.
Yeah. So the places people could get in touch with you, Robert, what's the best way for them to do that and learn more about LawPods?
LawPods.com. But really, we set ourselves up where if you have a search bar anywhere and you type LawPods, you should find us.
TikTok?
We're there. We don't publish much there. Really, mainly we went there just to understand how it worked well enough that we could make sure we were sharing our clients' content there in a way that worked.
Lemonade?
I don't know what you just said, so no.
the company who owns TikTok launched an app called Lemon with an 8 at the end, Lemonade.
Okay, no, and I don't know that one yet.
It's a new thing. I don't think they're audio focused, but it's a new platform.
Anyway. Yeah, and we're even on X. Is it X? Is that what it's called now? Twitter?
Oh, yeah, right, right. Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find a value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.